Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. So this is part three of Shia LaBeouf, but it's going to be a little bit different than the other parts. We'll get to, because I think when we were last were detailing everything, I think we were in about October of 2015, and so we'll get to that. But I've been waiting for him to file an answer to FKA Twigs's complaint. And he did file an answer. I would have bet $100 that they would have filed a demur at the same time. And a demur, I've talked about it on here before, is essentially just one big objection. Like if somebody's in court and they say objection relevance and then the judge rules, you know, sustained or overruled. And a demur is the same thing, except it's basically just an objection to the entire complaint, whether or not it holds water or not. It's basically an objection to the entire complaint. And then the person responds, the other side responds, and they said, no, these things should be left in. And then the judge says, overruled, sustained. Usually sustained would leave to amend, which means that FKA, she would get a chance to amend her complaint, so that way it would say what it's supposed to say. But they didn't do that. Shia's team didn't do that. Sean Holly, who is his attorney, didn't do that. They just filed an answer. And that was rather surprising. I mean, an answer is one of the, usually, not always, but usually, you know, if you file a demur, they've been trying to make it so there's not as many demurs because it's a very time-intensive process and it drags everything out. So, I mean, an answer is generally after a demur and all that stuff, then you'll do an answer. Now, that's not to say that they won't file a demur at the same time. They didn't file it at the same time. This whole thing has been kind of continued. If you recall, Talia, who's FKA Twigs, she filed a complaint back in December. So generally, an answer is due within 30 days, but they got an extension. So they actually didn't file it till last week. And the court system has been down since Thursday night for maintenance, which kind of sucked. I knew it was going down, but you think, oh, I've got everything, and turns out I couldn't find a day conformed copy, which is a file stamped one of something I filed, and I needed to see it, and anyway, I had to make some calls and some emails to find out exactly what date it was filed. Anyway, so they could have filed one on Friday and the court system was down, and then today was a holiday. But let's go back to, you know, I had read some of the 16-page complaint that Talia had filed. And the last that we had talked about it on here, we had talked about the time that Shia went over to Talia's house and her housekeeper was there. And, you know, he was trying to essentially keep Talia from leaving him. And one of the things I'm going to talk about a little bit in the complaint and we'll go to the answer, because the answer is very interesting. An answer is very vague. It doesn't really say a lot. They don't take very long to write. It is one of the easier things to write as an attorney because of how vague they are. But you can get little nuggets in them. But let's go back, and after this whole situation where at Talia's house and everything, beginning in around March 2019, Talia began to experience unusual and painful physical symptoms. And then she confronted Shia about her symptoms. And he admitted that he suffered from a sexually transmitted disease, which had been diagnosed years earlier. Admitted he never told Talia about his condition before, even though they had been sexually intimate for many months. And Shia admitted that he had experienced a flare-up of his disease's symptoms in December 2019, but worked to hide his outward symptoms from Talia by applying makeup. And it continued to engage in sexual relations with Talia, further exposing her to his disease. So, shocked and horrified by this revelation, Talia consulted with her physician, who performed blood work and confirmed that Talia had been infected with Shia's disease. And then, tragically, Talia later learned she was not the first person that LaBeouf had transmitted his disease to. Talia discovered that at least one other woman that LaBeouf had been in a relationship with had contracted the disease from him, and that he had engaged in similar attempts to hide his condition from that person while engaging in sexual relations. Now, let's go back to the answer, and then we'll keep reading that. So in his answer, what you're generally doing, and, I mean, to give you an idea, I think this thing is 5 pages long, something like that. Not very long at all. It is 5 pages, and one of them is just a signature page, which, by the way, Sean, just a little note. You know, I generally have the signature page with some stuff. I don't have it all by itself. That's just me. And they have all these affirmative defenses, in addition to a general denial. And most of them are boilerplate. That's the other thing. With answers, it's mostly done for you. They're super simple. And sometimes it can be hard to find some things because they are so vague. But in this particular case, in the second affirmative defense, it says defendant, which is Shia, denies that plaintiff Talia suffered any damages. But if it is determined that plaintiff has been damaged, then any such damages were not caused by defendant. So what they're saying, if you read between the lines, especially if you talk about the STD, is that he's basically saying, hey, she got it from someone else, not from me. Because in the third affirmative defense, lack of injury, it says plaintiff's claims are barred. So Talia's claims are barred in whole or in part because plaintiff has not suffered any injury or damage as a result of defendant's actions. And again, they basically say the same thing in the fourth affirmative defense, that defendant did not cause plaintiff any damages. Now, you could be talking about her mental anguish and things like that, but it really seems as if he's trying to say that she slept around. And then the fifth affirmative defense is plaintiff's claims are barred in whole or in part because none of the acts alleged were based on sex and or the conduct was not sexual, which is interesting also. And then here's where he's essentially saying that she's sleeping around. Plaintiff's causes of action are barred in whole or in part because plaintiff's own conduct and intervening third-party conduct caused all or some of plaintiff's alleged injury. So that is, again, saying, hey, I'm not the one who did it, or if I did, you know, she might have also got it from somebody else. Okay, and then skipping down, because again, most of these are just one line, but the 11th affirmative defense is very interesting. Plaintiff has waived and or released any right to obtain the relief on her claims. So what that leads me to believe is that she signed a non-disclosure agreement and also probably signed something else when they started having a relationship saying that she's not allowed to sue him. I don't know if it's an arbitration agreement. I don't know if it's just something that said, hey, you're not allowed to come after me and sue me for anything. But that's exactly what they're saying in this affirmative defense, that she signed some kind of waiver. So did this waiver include, hey, you know, there might be some sexually transmitted disease, you need to sign here. Did he give her the opportunity to take it to an attorney? Oftentimes, to have that, they'll have a little paragraph in there and says, oh, you know, she was offered the chance to go to an attorney and declined to sign here. So that's kind of the thing. And then as a result of plaintiff's knowledge, conduct, words, and or actions, plaintiff's claims against defendant are barred by unclean hands. And that just means that she was responsible for most of it. And then another one is that it's a two-line one. Is that Talia is barred in whole or in part from obtaining relief because defendant's alleged conduct was reasonably necessary for his self-defense and or safety. So what he's saying is that, yeah, you know, I pushed her or dragged her out of the car or whatever kind of violence, but I was just defending myself. And so they're going to say something like, oh, she's crazy. She hit me first. She was hitting me. I feared for my life or feared for my safety. And so, yes, I struck her. That's exactly what they're going to say. And then another one is failure to mitigate, saying that Talia failed to exercise reasonable care. So is he saying, hey, she should have not slept with other people. She should have insisted on a condom, these kind of things. But he's really going after the fact that she got it from somebody else. That's what it sounds like. So it sounds like we will hear some other things. And in a demur, we would have more facts. We would learn more. We wouldn't be trying to read between the lines on these two-line kind of things. But I mean, she's pretty detailed. And if you go back to her complaint, despite his endless mistreatment of Talia, Shia had succeeded in isolating her from her friends, family, and others that could help extricate her from the toxic relationship. Shia's domineering treatment of Talia had allowed him to convince her that he was a victim, that he genuinely loved her, and that he wanted to repair their relationship. So for the next few months, Talia engaged in multiple therapy sessions with LaBeouf in an attempt to salvage their relationship. So I guess also what he's saying in the answer is, hey, look, we tried. She had plenty of opportunities to leave. You know, we went to therapy and all this kind of stuff. And that because she decided to stay, you know, even knowing anything, that she's responsible. But Talia said, however, Shia's unpredictable and violent behavior did not change. Eventually, after Talia refused his endless stream of calls and text messages, LaBeouf unceremoniously ended his relationship with Talia via a text message. Talia later learned that LaBeouf had been cheating with another woman during this time. Now, she doesn't say who that is. My guess, is that Mia is probably involved in that, because remember, they got back together for a little while. So that's possibly who it is. And finally, free from Shia, Talia began the long and difficult process of healing from his abuse. As part of her path toward healing, Talia came into contact with Carolyn Foe, another survivor of Shia's abuse. And Carolyn dated LaBeouf during the years 2010 to 2011. Theirs was a well-documented and public relationship. Behind that publicity, however, Shia subjected Carolyn to the same kind of abuse, including physical abuse he inflicted on Talia, fueled by his jealous, impulsive, and irrational ways. For example, just as LaBeouf was fixated on Talia's former fiancé and would accuse her constantly of still being emotionally drawn to him, LaBeouf would berate Carolyn for something as innocuous as looking at the male waiting staff at a restaurant. LaBeouf would furiously claim that Carolyn was attracted to any male other than himself that she happened to be looking at, instigating needless traumatic arguments with Carolyn. Carolyn's experience with Shia was disturbingly similar to Talia's, demonstrating his pattern and practice of abusing women. For instance, in February 2012, LaBeouf traveled with Carolyn to New York City for Fashion Week. During their flight east, paid for by Carolyn, Shia angrily berated her for wearing expensive sunglasses and repeatedly humiliated her, causing her to burst into tears in front of other passengers on the airplane. Now, I haven't got to the end of the complaint, but I don't think that there is a declaration from Carolyn that's attached. There could have been. I didn't see it. So that's kind of unusual to put the past pattern in practice. You would definitely bring it up, and you'd have her as a witness and things like that, but you wouldn't generally see it necessarily in a complaint. But it does definitely, if you can keep it in there. And that's another reason with the demur, you think, oh, well, they can try and strike this for, you know, hearsay or whatever and get rid of it. But if you don't do that and you waive that objection, then it's in there. So he disappeared, talking about Carolyn and Shia. He disappeared the moment he deplaned at JFK Airport. Carolyn traveled to their hotel alone, could not find Shia, and went to bed. He eventually showed up to the hotel room extremely drunk, waking Carolyn by banging loudly on the door. Carolyn let LaBeouf into the room, where after babbling incoherently, he promptly passed out on the couch face up. Fearful that Shia might choke on his own vomit in that position, Carolyn helped carry him into a shower where she sat him upright and turned on the water. Shia continued to sit in this position, mumbling to himself. Believing Shia was no longer in danger, Carolyn returned to bed. Later that night, Carolyn awoke to Shia on top of her, drunk, naked, wet, and screaming. He held her down by her arms, causing intense pain and leaving multiple bruises, and then headbutted her violently, causing her to bleed on the hotel bed. Likewise, following a party at the Chateau Marmont in early 2011, Carolyn kept LaBeouf from driving home because of how drunk he was. They hailed a taxi. On the ride home to Sherman Oaks, Shia repeatedly berated and verbally assaulted Carolyn in front of the driver and repeatedly whispered to Carolyn, "You know I'm going to kill you." Once home, he vomited in the hallway. The next morning, Shia asked Carolyn about the vomit in the hallway, claiming he had blacked out and did not remember anything from the prior evening. Carolyn has bravely chosen to ally with Talia against Shia in order to protect women from ever again having to endure Shia's abuse. Let me see something really quickly. Yeah, see, it's just Talia against Shia. Anyway, Then they talk about Chaya's history of arrest and violence, which we've talked about in previous episodes and in the first two episodes, and which we will talk about when we get up to 2015. I think we're in late 2015. But there was, in 2007, arrested and jailed following an altercation with the next door neighbor. We've talked about that. We talked about his 2008 DUI, where he hit another vehicle. And then the bar fight in 2011. And then 2014, that performance of the musical Cabaret on Broadway. And then the 2015 drunken disorderly behavior resulting in his arrest on the streets of Austin, Texas, which we've talked about. And then we also talked about Mia Goth and the Germany incident, and where, you know, Chaya blamed Mia for pushing him. And then, you know, as he said, when he left the scene, he was caught saying, if I'd stayed there, I would have killed her. And this is the kind of thing that we've been talking about. Now, it's something that we haven't really talked about that's in the complaint, is that Chaya enlisted Talia's former assistant to threaten her. From 2017 until 2019, Talia employed Noelle O'Reilly as her personal assistant. And in connection with her employment with Talia, O'Reilly was privy to certain private and confidential information concerning Talia's personal life and career that O'Reilly was obligated not to disclose. And this is where we get to the answer about, you know, Shia's got this inside stuff, and it's all going to come out, is what he's essentially implying. It says, however, it has since become clear to Talia that O'Reilly repeatedly abused her position of trust by engaging in fraud and outright theft. Moreover, O'Reilly undertook most of her misdeeds while Talia was away from her home, living with LaBeouf. In August through October 2018, after her own application was denied and desperate to become a member of the exclusive Soho House chain of clubs, O'Reilly committed identity theft and hacking in order to pose as Talia so she could recommend herself for a club membership. And then once O'Reilly was approved, she then stole from Talia by paying for her Soho House membership with Talia's money. And all of this was done without Talia's knowledge and consent. As if posing as Talia in order to gain a club membership was not enough, O'Reilly stole articles of designer clothing from Talia and sold them for her own profit via the resale website Vestiaire Collective. O'Reilly then directed that the proceeds from these illicit sales be directed to her personal account. For instance, on October 4th, 2018, O'Reilly emailed the company stating, I have a large collection of designer items, about 100 to 150. I can't list them all. Account is under this email address. But this collection of designer items was Talia's personal property. So this led to a viewing appointment between O'Reilly and this company, the representatives of the company, at Talia's house without Talia's consent and while she was away. And then the following day, when the company informed O'Reilly that 15 of the items would need to be returned, O'Reilly had them returned to her own residence and not Talia's. Now, unaware of her duplicity, Talia confided in O'Reilly about Chaya's violent abuse of her. Indeed, O'Reilly took photographs of the bruises that Chaya inflicted on Talia in February 2019. O'Reilly even sent a text message to Talia's friends to warn them that Talia was in an abusive relationship. However, soon after Talia uncovered O'Reilly's deception and theft, she began to aid LaBeouf in his intimidation campaign against Talia. After Talia and Carolyn approached LaBeouf about informally resolving this dispute, which would have involved Chaya undergoing intensive psychotherapy and substance abuse treatment in addition to donating to a domestic violence shelter, Chaya began an intimidation campaign against Talia to frighten her from filing the lawsuit. And that's essentially what I talked to you about in the first part, where I knew this was all coming down because this was going back and forth. And if there wasn't, as I said in the blind, if there wasn't some kind of settlement, then all hell was going to break loose, and that's what happened. Chaya stated that O'Reilly had provided him with sensitive and confidential information obtained during O'Reilly's appointment with Talia, which he would use to embarrass Talia if she ever went public about Chaya's abuse. He also claimed that O'Reilly had provided a statement in which she would claim that Talia's February 2019 bruises did not result from LaBeouf's physical violence, but were self-inflicted from a strenuous dancing session Talia had that month. So that again goes back to the answer where she's doing all these bruises and the injuries to herself rather than Shia doing them. By providing confidential information and false statements to Shia, whom she knew had abused Talia, O'Reilly not only violated Talia's trust and confidence, but also her own contractual obligations to Talia. Talia has since spoken with a high-profile recording artist in the music industry who has also employed O'Reilly as his assistant. That artist informed Talia that O'Reilly also engaged in the theft of his property while under his employ. The fact that Shia would enlist such a disreputable person to support his intimidation tactics speaks volumes about his own character or lack thereof. Undeterred by Shia's shameful threats and determined to keep, you know, any more women from being ensnared and abused by such a dangerous man, Talia has pressed forward with this action. If Shia will not help himself and address his own demons, Talia will do everything in her power to keep him from hurting others. And since Talia has nothing to gain professionally from this action, she intends to donate a significant portion, not all, a significant portion of any money she receives from Shia to deserving nonprofits aimed at helping survivors of domestic abuse. Most importantly, women everywhere are now on notice that Shia is not the tortured artist he portrays himself as. He is a destructive and dangerous man. But it doesn't seem like it's stopping women from going out with him until they see it firsthand. And so that's essentially kind of where we are. And it was, I'm fascinated to see what Talia has told her assistant that Shia knows all about, which is why in this answer, he's saying, hey, I know all this stuff. Is he going to say that, well, he's kind of implying that Talia already had an STD, that she hurt him, you know, herself, that she assaulted him and he was defending himself. So it's going to be a lot of this kind of stuff. When will we see it? Well, I mean, there's no trial date scheduled as of yet. Talia did pay her jury fees, but I would imagine that we wouldn't see a trial maybe till the end of the year, if we're lucky. Again, the court calendar's down right now, and I can't remember what date they had set for some other things. But it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of stuff that Shia's going to throw out there to embarrass Talia. And a lot of it, you know, Talia said to her assistant, knowing that her assistant was also, you know, contractually obligated through a non-disclosure agreement to keep it to herself. I'm really fascinated to know if Talia did sign some waiver with Shia when they started dating that went well beyond any kind of just non-disclosure agreement, that she waived any rights if something happened to her. And, you know, if she did consult an attorney, I'm hoping that she did. But at the same time, you know, when you're in the throes of fresh young love and somebody says, well, you need to sign this, you know, if we're going to keep dating, you know, my manager makes me. And then she signs it, you know, just wants to do it. So even if she went to an attorney, the attorney goes, well, this is what's going to happen. So it's interesting, and I expect a lot more fireworks from this, a lot more fireworks. And I was hoping that there would be some more already. There could be. I think that the next phase of this will be mostly discovery. It will be kind of not visible to the public at all. If there is a trial, obviously it would be televised because it is in California. So we shall have to see. Anyway, I wanted to keep you guys updated on that, and I will talk to you later.